Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 84 of the Peak of Serenity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello!
And this week, we are going to be talking about a bit more from 915. We got some very spicy news this week, like the fact that Spinning Crane Kip is now going to be uncapped, which I think word on the street is basically that that is going to get Windwalker AoE nerfed, because... Oh boy.
A little out of control. A little out of control.
Their AoE is already incredible in Mythic Plus. It's going to be even better after
Yeah, so that'll be, we'll definitely dive into that a little bit. But I think, I think first up, how is the last boss of this instance going?
How about you go first?
All right. I think last time we talked, we had, I think we only had maybe like one or two pulls into phase three. We were still sort of feeling out phase two at that point. And yeah, so we had another two nights on it this week and had some very consistent phase twos, which I think is good. And I think right now our best is about 51% on the boss.
Nice.
So we're there. We're close. Yeah. So I think, to be fair, it's funny. Like, that seems, you only have to get her, what, to 45 to kill her?
Yeah.
But for us, that's only getting to the second platform and then failing at the third platform. So we still, I think, have a little bit of a ways to go, particularly with like Wailing Arrows and getting some placement down. The soaks are a little bit. To be fair, I didn't know what our raid leader was like. And like, I'll get this soak. And I was like, I didn't realize there were soaks in the final phase of Sylvanas. So that was good. I'm one of the puddle soakers on the first platform when you drop. Like, yeah. I get the right platform. Did not realize that was my job. Until like we made it there and they were like, okay, now I'm go soak. I was like, what? So it's been a learning experience, but no, it's been fun. Like, it's a boss where, like, it, I don't know, for whatever reason, every boss I think ends up like this, but I think for me, at least this time, it's a little bit more noticeable with Sylvanas, which is like, you get to a point in the fight, like phase one seems overwhelming, and now phase one is like everybody seems clean. You get to phase two and it seems overwhelming, and like, now we're getting DPS down, things are a lot easier. So I think the biggest change, I don't know if we talked about this, the biggest change we made that cleaned up our intermission between phase one and phase two was like actually getting all the healers to get the close chain sets and then actually having our DPS DPS them, because what we found out was literally DPS were scattering to the four winds, DPSing their own chains, their own groups, and then like the healers were also fighting it. And so we couldn't heal them or whatever. So
yeah,
I think that was a big intermission change we made. But it's been good. I mean, we're about 130, 140 pulls in, with about like 8 to 10 solid P3 pulls. So
nice. Yeah. So we are also 130 pulls in now.
Whoa, nice.
But that is because we've spent a lot of fucking time wiping in phase one.
Oh no.
We had five phase two pulls yesterday or Friday.
That's not enough.
No, it's not. And so I spent all day yesterday just combing through logs, figuring out what the fuck is going on. And we made a couple comp changes. One of the big things we were having people die to is they were bleeding out during domination chains in phase one while the Black Arrow was going out.
Gotcha.
Because they just weren't getting enough triage healing to get healed through it. Like, there's sets of those chains that you just cannot kill reliably before the first Black Arrow goes out. You have to healed.
They have to live through it, yeah.
But then also, like, our intermission is just a mess. We were basically relying on having three Boomkins doing their Rav AoE setup to hard carry Arrow.
Yeah.
And that was not working consistently. Because basically, they were just not, like, we would usually get two of the three to do it, but then the third one wouldn't get it, and that would mean that stuff would die really slowly, and people would just bleed out. You know, we would get to six stacks of the chain dot, and people would just die.
Gotcha.
And then we were trying to get healers chained to the near chains and you know, melee break them out. We ran into issues with the way that the spawns can change. So the way that the spawns work, always get the center set of chains. You always get one chain by itself somewhere. And then you get... There's four other spots chains can spawn. Basically, northeast, southeast, southwest, and northwest. And you get three of those. We were stacking right in front of the southwest one. So if the southwest one spawned, it was really easy. The healers just got to the back of the group and they got chained to it. The southwest one didn't spawn. Getting the healers chained to the correct
chain set
it was virtually impossible. And so we are adjusting our intermission strategy pretty substantially for tonight. Because, like, we actually have reached the point that our phase one is really, really clean except for those two things. It's the bleeding out and it's the intermission stuff. Yeah. And so if we can get through those, then every single pull should be a phase two pull. At this point, I find so. but, yeah. So prog not going so great. I was really happy with where our prog was when we talked last week. But we've had two raid nights since then, and I am no longer very happy with where our prog is. And yeah, fingers crossed that tonight we get a lot more work in on phase two.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't realize there was different chain sets. Cause we, it's fun. Well, spawns. I knew they were slightly different. I didn't realize they were that different. Cause where we stack, there's always at least one, like there's the one in the center, right?
Yeah.
But the one that the healers get is always not right, always in the same. Yeah. It's always like just around our stack point. So we just sort of back away from the center and normally we're in range, right, of anything we need to be. So. Yeah.
So basically where we're going now is like we're going, instead of being southwest, we're going straight south, which is going to be in between the southwest and southeast spawns. And then like the healers are just going to look. And if the southwest one is spawning, then they're going to get chained to that one. And if it's not, they're getting chained to the southeast one. So there's always one that's like very close to us that they can get chained to.
Gotcha. Yeah, now I'm intrigued because I wonder where our stack point is. Oh yeah, our stack point is southwest actually.
Yeah, because I think we actually used a similar one to what you were doing. But doing this way actually also let us give like totally deterministic assignments to the rest of the raid for like what they were killing when. And that's one other thing we were having as well, is we were also having DPS like scattered to the four winds, and then the chains were just not consistently dying, like quickly enough because people were spending a lot of time just running around. Time spent running around, not time spent DPSing. So we've changed it so that people have assignments now. So like the range to killing the center, then going to northwest and then northeast, and the melee are going southwest, southeast, northeast. And so fingers crossed, it should be more consistent.
Hopefully that helps for sure.
Yeah, I'm getting some major Jaina flashbacks right now because Jaina is a boss that I had 400 something pulls on and almost all of them were phase one.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, most of ours, I feel like if I remember Jaina correctly, we split phase one and phase two as the majority of it, but our phase two pulls where we would wipe were very consistently wrong, like ice path callouts. Where like somebody called out where to go wrong and we just died. So it was not like, hey, we ticked down or we didn't do something. It was just like somebody made a wrong call out and we would die. It was very frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, we also died 7 times to Calamity on Friday, which is...
Fun fact, we found out like our hunters, I guess we only had one, would immune and run into his arrow to like remove it, but like wasn't telling people, so people were like randomly dying to Calamity and we finally figured out like 2 or 3 pulls in. So yeah, it was nice. That was funny. Yeah, because like our hunter would run away, turtle, get one of the far chains on him, and then run into it to clear the buff or whatever, the debuff, and it was randomly killing like a druid who was out there doing something. So hopefully the changes help. Yeah, the whole inconsistent getting healers chained, once we like personally for our guild, once we did that and once we sort of had people focus, it let healers like it let us run out to the middle and heal like far change people, right? Because we would always have probably like 3 or so people get to like 6 stacks. Yeah. And so they would need some targeted healing as like the end of the intermission went. So but cool. I mean, yeah, hopefully tonight's good for you. So what I'm thinking, I made a prediction kind of internally, but I'll say it here, is that I think Thursday is our kill day. I think if we get a very solid Tuesday in and see phase three, I think we probably only need about five or so more phase three attempts. And it's really for me because I want to make sure my cooldowns are good. I'm like nervous about how we set cooldowns up for that.
I still have to go through and do some more cooldown planning for me for phase three, because I get to be the vacuum for most of it.
Gotcha.
So
yeah, that'll be fun. But I guess maybe staying on the Sylvanas train as we get into what happened last week. There was a couple of Sylvanas changes, I guess we'll say. One of the big ones was a game performance change. So
yes,
I don't know if I think they had mentioned that they were doing this last time we spoke, but it actually went in, I think, this week. And it definitely saw a change. Our first maybe two or three pulls of Tuesday were DPS dying because they were expecting the lag.
And then
and it didn't come. So a bunch of Sylvanas sort of some optimizations there. And then a couple of Wailing Arrow and Black Arrow cast changes. So because the first one in phase three, Mystery Monks are no longer preferred Wailing Arrow targets, which was always fun being the only healer getting targeted by that. So that was a good time. I did Heroic a couple weeks ago, and I think I got like every Wailing Arrow I was targeted by one of them.
That's amazing. I wonder cast, why that was fun. Happening.
So the only thing I can think of is it was like a race condition where since Mistweaver is both a melee and a healer, I wonder if like through like their when they do like some sort of prioritization of who gets targeted by it, like
yeah.
we didn't fit in any buckets, so we ended up airing out and just being a top target. Like we weren't like classified
but
as a tank.
Paladins,
we always get to
Paladins are also a melee and a healer, so wouldn't they I don't know.
There has always been a weird way that they've determined at least Mistweaver like as a healer versus a melee. Like in that sort of because like this always goes like you always hear the people used to use the term soft melee and hard melee in terms of like how we were classifying. Like Mistweaver was always hard melee, meaning like we were just treated like melee for any mechanic that would happen. And then Paladin was like soft melee, where like they would generally be considered a healer, except maybe with specific abilities. And the most egregious one was Gul'dan Eyes. So the eyes on Gul'dan would target a person, and on Mythic they had an AoE pulse around them, so you had to spread out. They only ever targeted ranged. However, Paladins were a valid target to that ability.
Yeah.
At a time when Paladin was mostly in melee. So that's like the biggest one, but yeah. I think it probably had something to do with the way they're we're classified as a class and spec, and we just end up being like an error piece, right? Like I don't know. I think of most Blizzard encounters as big if-then statements. And then, so.
Yeah.
We weren't in there. And I guess the Black Arrow changes were interesting too. So like, so we actually had this happen where they fixed an issue where basically both tanks could be targeted by the same Black Arrow cast. We had this happen on multiple pulls this week or last week, I guess, before the change went in, which is annoying.
So is that the phase, that Black Arrow is phase one, right?
The phase one ability, yeah. So we'd have a tank get, or both our tanks get hit by it. And like, to be fair, like I think as a tank, you just sort of zone out. So if it's not yours to get targeted by it, like you see the cast go off, I guess you taunt the boss maybe, and like your co-tank runs out and you expect that to happen. But like what was happening for us is like, we just died like a Black Arrow landing in the group, and we'd like look at logs. It was like, well, our monk got it and our warrior got it like in the same cast. So yeah.
I have never gotten Black Arrow past the first one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's normally, I think the way our timing works out too is mostly our monk gets it. He tanks second, but,
this third change, fixed an issue where Dark Sentinels could cast Rage, which is their fixate, on target struck by a very recent Black Arrow. Kind of a partial fix, because what it does is if you have been shot by a Black Arrow, you can't get targeted by Sentinels from that one or future ones. But you can be targeted by ones that have already spawned. So if you have the second arrow, you can be targeted by sentinels from the first arrow.
It's stupid. We lost, I think, one or two people to this.
Yeah, we lost some people to it on Friday as well. It's really obnoxious. Like, it's such an oversight. Like, you want it to just be people that they're picking, because they all have the debuff at that time. They all have the Black Arrow debuff. You know what the three targets are.
Right. Plus, it's always awkward because you're like, you're normally running out and you sort of like, I don't know, we do like a loop thing. So like, the person with Black Arrow stands in a specific spot and everybody else runs to the side that gets it and then like comes into the center so they hit. So most of the sentinels spawn together. So literally, if you're, to your point, if you're second or third, you are running to where all the sentinels are supposed to be spawning. Spawned.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have no chance of like, getting out of there. So yeah. Yeah. Somewhat. Yeah. Partial change. But yeah, it's at least dying after you get hit to like a sentinel running at you or your own sentinels was very, very annoying. Like getting, targeted immediately as you sort of try and waddle your way back in is annoying. So, but yeah, the optimizations, like, I mean, I know we touched on that quickly, but like, that's a big change. Like, we've seen very little lag. Nice. It's super, super noticeable. So
there's also a couple of undocumented changes to Sylvanas that I wanted to touch on.
Oh, I don't know about these.
Because I have all the hotfix information in prog stats to show what major hotfixes go in. And I was asking the Illuminati, hey, how many minor bug fixes does it take to make a major hotfix? Specifically about Sylvanas. And they were like, I don't think any of these kind of major hotfix except for the undocumented fixes that they did this week. And I was like, sorry, what undocumented fixes? And so there's two. Number one, Ruin no longer consistently wipes the raid. It still will sometimes because we had it wipe us on our phase two pulls this week. So it still can kill you, but apparently it won't always because there's reports of people like having Ruin go off and just nobody dies.
I've seen that, That actually happened to us.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So that's one of them. And then the other one is actually related to Veil Baits in Phase 2, where previously there was basically a grid that they went on, and it wouldn't overlap them. So there was always at least, some amount of space between them. Now they target players, and so if the entire raid is stacked, then they are going to basically be, like, very, very likely to be just hard stacked. And then you can just walk out of them. So that second one is a big one.
Yeah, because we've been doing it's weird that just went in, because we've been doing the whole, like, group up, at least on the first DPS phase, and then, like, gate out.
Yeah.
Right? As they start spawning. So,
interesting. Yeah, I don't know specifically how it interacts with the ones on the second set of platforms. I haven't gotten there yet. But the first of the platforms, it was pretty noticeable that they would, like, we went from having, three in a big line on one of the platforms to having them, like, completely compressed into one. And, like, it's not, like, exactly one because they weren't exactly stacked, but still a lot closer. So,
yeah. 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 The Ruin change is funny, too, because I think someone in my guild was like, can we, like, game this to just, like, push through phase two quickly just to sort of, like, try phase three, basically turn it into, like, Fallen Avatar in terms of, like, when you wouldn't soak beams on Fallen Avatar just so you could practice, like, the second phase of that fight. Could you do the same thing here? Because, like, immediately if she casts Ruin and you don't die, she immediately jumps to, like, start her next sequence. So, like, from a DPS perspective, you lose out, like, on a DPS phase doing that.
But you could practice phase three with her just having higher health.
Exactly, yeah. So you could push her, you could push into phase three quicker, hopefully with everyone alive, and then do it that way. So yeah, we were trying to game it. I think we spent like maybe one pull, or like not even a pull, just sort of talked about potential ways to game it. But
yeah,
that might be one way that they tried, or that you could use it to make it a little bit easier. Or sorry, to give yourself more practice on phase three. So
I don't think you can abuse that, really. I think that one is just kind of a crapshoot, and sometimes you will have a pull where Ruin goes off and you just happen to not die.
Yeah, at which point you should jump off anyway because you missed the DPS phase there, and then you're sort of screwed. So, but yeah, those are the I didn't realize the Veil one on Sylvanas. So interesting. All right, cool. So I think next up is it's staying with the raid theme. It is a 915 change. It's coming with 915, but has to deal with Kel'th Azad and the fact that at the end of every Phylactery phase, he will cast a new ability called Dark Surge, which basically refreshes any major cooldowns that might be on cooldown. So essentially, after every time you do phase one, do the intermission, and your team comes up from the phylactery, he will reset all major cooldowns, which is a massive change to a fight that like literally was an AFK fest, right? We used to call it AFKT. because the idea was is you would essentially like do the phase one where you'd have like the spikes that spawn and the soaks and the tank adds and things like that. But you'd get the boss very low, so he'd stop casting that stuff and then basically hold DPS until a certain timing, and then you DPS him and do phase two.
Yeah.
Similarly, you'd extend phase two as long as you could, and then get back into phase one. And the only reason you did this was for cooldown, right? Like you needed major healing cooldowns up, you needed major DPS cooldowns up. So it wasn't that the boss was the most difficult part of the boss was literally just waiting, like not doing damage or like being AFK.
Yeah, the most difficult part of the boss for us was getting the timing right, like slowing DPS downstairs and upstairs enough that both of us pushed out of our respective intermission phases at the same time, and also within a few seconds of the end, like the wipe mechanic, so that we would have enough time for our CDs to come back up for the next set of
right fights. Yeah,
that was by far the hardest part of the fight for us.
Yeah, and then it's also there is like if you are like a second or two early in any one of these things, by the time you get to the third phase, you don't have healing cooldowns up for when the spikes go off, and then you literally just wipe. But it's like it's a wipe you know about probably 30 to 45 seconds in advance, and because the fight doesn't do any damage, like you can't wipe. I guess you could always kill the spikes early and just sort of.
You
wipe
can
it,
kill but... one early, and we did have that happen on a couple of progression pulls where like, you know, we knew we pushed fast, and someone just dropped a spike outside. It just killed it, and then, you know, we did what we could, and usually still died, but you know, you can do some things, but yeah.
So it was annoying. It's sort of I think it's a theme of this raid. It's funny when I was thinking back to when we started this theme or started this tier, and we talked about like sort of what things we don't want them to continue, which was like phase timers, right? Like having certain like DPS checks or just like global timers on things. So like if you got out of sync, the fight just became invariably harder, which I think we still had a little bit of, but like it turned into this like hold damage meta because they did the thing we wanted, which was like reset timers on phase transitions. What ended up happening is now instead of just pushing through when those timers making sense, it was like, well, now you just held DPS, so you'd phase at the right time. So his timers reset at the right time.
KT actually didn't start with his cooldown resetting, or his cooldowns resetting when you pushed him. The initial version, which spells he casts depends on his mana. And his mana wouldn't reset coming back up from the phylactery. You could use that actually to skip mechanics as well. So people are using it to skip some meteors and things. But that did mean that you had to like pay attention to where his mana bar was when you pushed him, because otherwise you would get like spikes immediately after the intermission.
Yeah.
But that got fixed like week two. So
yeah, it's not as mad, it's more consistent. But yeah, it's just like, okay, you have a specific cycle of like when you want to do things. So
Yeah.
This will be a good change. It'll probably, I mean, ultimately it just makes farm easier, right? Like by the time this goes in, the guilds that this is really annoying for, or like from a progression perspective, it also makes the fight simpler, but we'll be so deep into progression that it's just like we'd expect changes like this to bosses, right? At that point. So that is KT changes. It'll be fun. It'll at least make it so you don't
it'll be a lot better.
Hold for like 45 seconds or a minute in certain cases. So cool. All right, next up is another quick hot fix note. One that's incoming is for an achievement that's near and dear to my heart. It's Breaking the Chains achievement, which is sort of the meta achievement for Korthia. Has you kill like every rare, has you do a bunch of certain things with the assaults that come in, get rank 6 with Archivist Codex, which we'll talk about some fun stuff happening with that one. But this one, apparently, the achievement was broken, was not rewarding the mount. So after literally today, or this assault, this Nightfae assault would have been the first time that you could actually complete it, because the final quest you needed
was
to do
this assault.
The Zoval Shuffle was the achievement name, but it was actually now active, this assault, that quest was active, to then do the meta achievement or meta part of the achievement. So yeah, so I guess they weren't handing out the mount, which is just like, dude, like come on. like testing and production, I guess, with this one. So hotfix is in. I think if you had submitted a ticket, you might have gotten the mount manually from a GM. They've since stopped that, so they're gonna wait for this hotfix to come in and then you'll get the mount. So all I need is rank 6 of the Archivist Codex at this point, and I will get.
How far are you into rank 5?
I am about 12,000 out of 16,000, so about 4,000 more. And so I've been averaging about 350 rep a day. Yeah. So about another, what is that, like another 2 weeks or so, hopefully, give or take. So yeah. So we're closing in.
Yep. I completely gave up. How close are you? Archivists. Oh. I completely gave up. I'm somewhere in between rank 4 and rank 5.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I was like, number one, sockets aren't good for me. Like, obviously they're good, but they don't do much. Two, I'm just gonna get my conduits from Torghast at this point. I'm actually almost done with that. So
I still need to do Torghast this week, actually. That reminds me. I forgot you can get conduits from that. I just remember that you could get sockets with it. So I just socketed all my
gears. Dude, if I do my Torghast this week and it gives me a socket instead of a conduit, I'm gonna be so mad.
Sockets are not great for you, huh?
I mean, it's still fine. It's just like I've got one more 239 conduit to get. And then I start getting 252s. And I mean, fingers crossed I get lucky and I get my good conduit pretty quickly at 252. And then I can just forget about the rest. If I get unlucky, then it might be another 6 weeks before I get the good conduit from Torghast.
Yeah, I've stopped doing Torghast. The last 2 weeks, I haven't done it.
Yeah.
So like the first weeks I've skipped since the start.
I cannot stand doing it. So I'm doing Torghast instead. That's my comfort. And it doesn't really matter because, like, I have 239, pretty much all 239 conduits. The one I have left to get is done. So, it would have been nice to have 252 before Mythic Sylvanas, but I don't think it's that relevant for me because it's just Invoke Niazhao damage is the only one. So,
yeah. Yeah, and it's just conduits is always a system I forget about. I feel like I realize a lot of people engage with it, but like for me, I just never remember it's there, and then I never know like what my conduit things are. I don't even know how to get conduits outside of using the items. I'll be completely honest with you.
You can't.
Oh, okay. So that's fair. So then
they drop from raid, but the good ones don't drop from raid in general. So you get them from Korthia or Torghast, which is the stupidest thing. Like
it's a weird acquisition method, I'll say.
Like they went back in Castle Nathria and they added the good conduits to the raid so that you could get them as boss drops. So like Shriekwing started dropping our Invoke Niazhao conduit. There's no place to get that in 9.1.
So weird.
It just doesn't drop and I don't understand it. Like, there are a bunch of 252 conduits that you can get from the raid, but not that one.
That's funny.
Not the only one we care about.
That is hilarious. Yeah, that's very, very weird. I wonder why they did that. I don't know. I guess moving forward through this list. I don't know why I put this one in there, but I guess somewhat important. Ignore is now account wide in 915. So when you ignore a player on one account, it now ignores them on all your accounts. To be fair, my ignore list I think has one person on it, so like I don't ever really use it.
Well, no, it's the other way around. It is, if you ignore someone's character, you like slash ignore, you know, Bitcoin Moon, then it ignores all of their characters.
Oh, right. Sorry, I messed up.
Yeah, you got it backwards. Okay, it's not all of your accounts to get it. It might. But now it's like all that character and all of their own.
It's a good change, I guess, if someone's sort of like harassing you.
That's actually a really good change.
I guess I read it. Yeah, I 100% read it wrong. Interesting. Yeah, for me, I don't ever ignore people. I also don't talk to people in game other than people I already know. So it's probably a lot.
Yeah, this actually also means that if you ignore someone that's doing trade chat like spam sales,
yeah, that's true.
They have to get a new account before you see them again.
That is good. Yeah, that's a good. Yeah, that's a great change actually. Speaking of great changes. The Alliance, or 100 Alliance guilds, have finally killed Sylvanas. So, yeah, that means Alliance Hall of Fame closed, or is closing, this reset, which means next reset, Crossrealm Mythic is open, which is cool. I mean, love this sort of idea of Crossrealm Mythic. Hate the fact that...
it's gated by the Alliance completing the instance 100 times?
Yeah, which is just... It's funny, like, a bunch of people get really upset about this, particularly around, like, how do we make the factions balance? And it's like, well... Like, I don't know if it's a Blizzard problem to fix, right? Like, I don't think you ever get balanced factions again. And I would say, like, I don't think you ever get balanced factions in pretty much any game, I'll say.
Yeah.
I think this was a thing even
in Pokemon Go, okay? Go had people pick one of three factions. And one of them sucked because nobody picked it.
Yeah.
And the other two, like, I think, I don't know where they ended up, but around the time it came out, there was, like, one that was clearly the most popular. And it varied a little bit by area you were in. So there's one that was clearly the most popular in most areas, and there was one that was, like, reasonably popular in some areas, and there was one that was just, like, nobody picked it.
Yeah, and I think I often think about this because, like, a lot of people are like, well, what can Blizzard do to change it? Do they give, like, Alliance overpowered racials? And it's just like, well, like, that doesn't, like, that's what started this, right? Like, back in Cataclysm, I think, or even before that, right? Like, the Horde racials from a PvE perspective, or actually just in general, to be fair, were just better than the Alliance one. So that sort of started the snowball of, like, you see, like, the top guilds. That's when, like, Method went from Alliance to Horde through their progression and stuff like that. Or old Method, you know, now it's, I guess they're still Method, not old, what, in any event, that's when they transferred over, and that's when you start to see, like, a trickle, and it becomes a sort of idea of, like, well, to play the game at the highest level, or to, you know, or to follow the highest level people, you'll play on one faction, and then, like, that sort of slowly compounds itself unless it swings the other way.
I'm relatively active. There's a recruiting Discord for North American servers, for people that are doing guild recruiting, and you don't want to be Alliance looking for players.
No.
Oh man, you are in for a bad time. Like, we have it bad already. My team has it pretty bad because we're a weekend team. We do not have it as bad. Like, there are weekday Alliance teams that have it so much worse. So much worse. One of the things they could do to actually help would be to make faction transfers to Alliance free.
That's true.
They could do that because that means that if someone wants to take a trial in an Alliance guild, they can do that. And it's free. And that means that, you know, worst case, they fail the trial and they have to pay a transfer fee to go somewhere else. Yeah. But they don't have to pay it twice, basically. But there's still a lot of barriers. Like, you know, if you've got a character that's not your main that you use to craft potions and stuff, well, if you're going and trialing in an Alliance guild, do you transfer that character too? That costs twice as much right now.
You know? Right.
So doing free transfers, I think, would help free transfers to Alliance. And it wouldn't even necessarily be about, like, guilds just, like, wholesale hopping to Alliance. I don't think that's going to happen. No. But it would mean that, like, you could, you know, you could get recruits from Horde that maybe because they don't have to pay literally anything, take the trial. Could do it.
Yeah, that definitely could be one, because you're generally more than likely going to pay not only for the faction transfer but for the server transfer too. So it's like, it's like a $50 investment just to move a character, 55 whatever it ends up being.
It's a lot of money.
So
it is one of those things where, like, I think ultimately they're going to have to bite the bullet and make PvE cross faction. But in the short term, that would be a solution that they're, like, business people may not like, because I'm sure they make, like, $55 a transfer is a good chunk of change, but it would be, like, a lower cost solution than just flipping the switch and not everybody can play together.
For sure. So, but yeah, I mean, that's Alliance Hall of Fame. They closed it, so Crossrealm Mythic's there. It's just Yeah, they need to do something, I think, moving forward, because it's only going to get worse, and it'll be like down to like three guilds that play Alliance, right? Well, there are pretty much is only three, but
yeah,
I mean, but yeah, most all those Oceanic, which is, yeah, I think the idea there is
carrying us.
Yeah, I mean, Oceanic never switched to Horde, so like they just stayed Alliance, which is where everybody plays. So you can't actually play Horde on Oceanic Realms, but yeah, you definitely play Alliance,
which so kind of goes to show that, especially these days, actually these days, Alliance has better racials except for Goblin Jump. Goblin Jump is the only racial that Horde has. It's like clearly better than anything the Alliance has. But
every, yeah.
It's all not about racials, it's not about the factions at this point. It's about the play, about the population.
Yeah.
And it's about the fact that you need 20 plus people to play Mythic. And you can't go to the lower population faction and expect to be able to do that.
Right. Right, and like, yeah, I mean, I don't know how much more we're going to spend on this, but there's also the trickle-down effect of, like, you don't even have to raid Mythic to want to play on Horde, because, like, to play, do anything else in the game, you'll need to be on Horde, right? Like,
Mythic,
you know,
Plus is
Heroics,
a one.
Mythic Plus, yeah. Yeah, all that type of stuff sort of trickle down from that, so. So, yeah, so, but Lions Hall of Fame closed, Cross Realm of Mythic incoming, we'll see how that goes, so. So cool, so next up, I flip-flopped these a little bit in the order, but next up is Progress, so. TBC got their phase 2 patch, which unlocked Lady Vash, or well, unlocked Serpent Shrine Cavern and Tempest Keep in terms of content, and Progress killed both bosses in like 2 hours for world first on both, which is, we laugh about it, but I mean, it's what, 15-16 year old content, been done to death. Like the idea that this is no longer hard in terms of like just defeating it. It's more of like the way that they did it, which was like how fast they got through it all.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy. And like, I don't know if you saw the skip that they did. I don't know if it was them specifically, but the Serpent Shrine Cavern skip.
I didn't see it.
So there's a skip. I wish I should have put it in the notes, and I'm sorry I didn't, but there's a skip where I don't know if you've ever entered Serpent Shrine Cavern, but there's the elevator you take down.
Yeah,
and apparently is. Yeah, as you fall down that elevator, if you basically rocket jump and collide, I don't know, it's not rocket jump and glide, but whatever the TBC equivalent of is, it as soon as it opens up into the cavern, you glide onto a pipe that's solid, and then you can run along that pipe and then jump off that pipe and land on Hydros, whoever the first boss is, whatever the elemental is. So you basically skip all the bridge trash up there, and you just kill the first boss and keep moving. Yeah, the bridge trash is terrible. I watched that skip, which I thought was pretty crazy. And just the speed at which, like, the different things that they do just to speed up encounters and, like, in between trash, I think it's just, like, a very much a, like, speedrunner type mentality.
Yeah,
which I think is cool.
At this scale, like, at this time scale, it's no longer about, like, how long it takes them to progress bosses like it is on retail. It's about how many different ways can they find to not do trash? How many different ways can they find to, like, make boss encounters a little bit shorter? So that they can get the whole thing in, you know, like this in 2 hours.
Right. Yeah. It's all about the speed now, which I think is a cool way to look at like a quote unquote world first race. It's like, it's very much like an MDI type mentality, but with, what is it? Still 40 people, right? Or 25 people, sorry. 25. Yeah. On that. So yeah, that was cool. Congrats to Progress on it. KT is still probably one of my favorite boss fights to progress on. I thought that was so cool. And Lady Vash was interesting too. It was like throwing the cores while seemingly a very easy thing to do today, which is like, if you guys don't know the encounter, there are mobs you need to kill that dropped an item that you couldn't move when you had the item in your inventory, so you had to like toss it in a chain and then essentially dunk it, sort of like the Mail Muncher in the Mail Muncher boss, and
also like Gahoon.
Oh yeah, Gahoon. Yeah the orbs on Gahoon, yeah, for sure. Yeah, very similar. So it was a cool boss at the time, and yeah, it was fun to do. So yeah, miss those, but in any event, congrats to Progress. And I think the final thing before we get sort of into the topic of the day, which is to talk about a little SDK and some other changes, is Wowhead did an interview with BDGG in terms of their like feedback on sort of class balance and like comp changes and things like that, and I don't think anything sort of, it wasn't anything sort of crazy that people haven't already talked about, right? It's like, hey, you know, warriors were really good, but enhancement shamans were good because warriors were good. And so like there was like a synergy there, like Boomkins were crazy good, but everybody knew that. The difference between Venthyr and Night Fae was like super minor, that like it just depended on your playstyle. Well, I think Venthyr was like theoretically higher DPS. It also required a very specific like cast sequence and playstyle.
I think so this is something to keep in mind. BDGG is talking from the perspective of competing in the world first level.
Right.
Their Boomkins do not have multiple weeks to practice Ravenous Frenzy, or they have to do it on the hard bosses.
Right, yeah.
That said, I also think kind of the situation that we ended up in, like we have three Boomkins, and I kind of wish that they had just played Night Fae and that we had just not played around Rav. Rav is extremely good. When they got it, like when they got it figured out, they just hard carried entire phases. Just like the three of them together, just hard carrying, you know, KT downstairs, that kind of thing. But the ability is so incredibly punishing that it's just frustrating. I think it might have slowed down our progression if they had been Night Fae instead of Venthyr. But oh my god, I don't ever want to deal with Ravenous Frenzy again.
Yeah, that was a rough one. So and I think all of our druids actually are Venthyr, but yeah, to that point they have gotten weeks to practice and plenty of time to sort of get it on lockdown until we got while we got to these harder bosses, and even then they still die randomly.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we've, like I was talking about earlier when we were discussing Sylvanas, you know, we had planned on our druids kind of carrying damage on the chains in the intermission, and they still are going to do a lot of chain damage. Basically, now we have a fallback where, like, if one of our druids eats the Rav stun, we're not completely SOL.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it for sure. But yeah, I mean, I think from a DPS perspective, they sort of went into all those sort of all the different ones, why certain classes were brought, right? And they also talked a little bit about healers, you know, just understanding that like Dispriest and Holy Paladin just too strong in terms of a pair. And like a little bit, they touched on a little bit. The funny thing is they did mention Mistweaver Monks, which from a farm perspective are like, it's fun to see.
Also talked about making like Tiger's Lust an AoE cooldown, which please don't. I love it as... It's don't forget, that's not just a Mistweaver button.
Yeah. So yeah, almost like a roar. Cause like movement was a very important this tier in terms of like fading things and moving out of it. But yeah, it's funny that they touched on the rise of Mistweaver, particularly in farm, because you'll see a bunch of Mistweavers now sort of topping overall HPS charts. But not being brought to progression just because like DPS wise, we still are behind Holy Paladins that can drop Ashen, and Disc is just in general really good at damage and does just enough healing to keep the raid alive. Still has barrier from a mitigation perspective. And then they talked a little bit about tanks, which I thought was slightly interesting in the fact that like Paladin was so, prop Paladin specifically was fairly high on their specific list, and they sort of split time between Brewmaster and DK at the end as like their second tank.
I think that's, if you look at the like first 10 kills of Sylvanas, there's like 8 prop paladins or something like that, maybe 9. Very, very high up there because they do have just incredible damage, but they also bring immunities. And the immunities are very good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it seems like that's I don't know if that's going to be a thing now as we move forward. Cause, well, actually, to be fair, it has been a thing, I think, for the last couple of expansions in terms of like pre-immuning things so that you don't actually get it, right? Where you're still a valid target in your immunity. And if you get targeted by an ability, the ability just doesn't go off, right? You can kind of negate it, right?
Right. So there's things as well, like on KT, you can spell warning someone that's getting targeted by the meteor, and then they don't have to soak. So early on, that's nice. There's on Guardian, you know, Sloot infamously did the solo tank on a prop paladin. Which also goes to show that they are actually like not squishy as they had been in the past. Not as squishy. They are still squishier than some other tanks, but I mean, Guardian slaps, and you know, solo tanking that is no mean feat. But then that was made possible by the fact that they have Divine Shield and they had Spell Warding.
Yep.
So
yeah. So I mean, it's it was nice to get a little bit of, I guess, feedback. It wasn't as detailed as I think you might. It wasn't like a full review of like, hey, here's everything we thought about as we all went through it. But it was good to get at least a little bit of a sort of look behind the scenes from, I mean, to be fair, what, the number two US guild and number and top 10 world guild overall. So
yeah,
top five world guild. So yeah, no, good. Always like to see BDGG in the news for sure. So cool. I think that's sort of a wrap on last week's topics. And now we're going to dive a little bit into, I feel like we've been doing this a lot. We gotta pick a new topic for next week. But a little bit into some of the additional changes. It feels like the changes are starting to slow a little bit in terms of what we're seeing on PTR. Like they're starting to solidify like the scope of this thing. But we did get a couple of sort of, we'll say, interesting changes sort of dropped into PTR this week. But I guess the first one being the target cap changes. So basically they have removed the target cap for Spinning Crane Kick, across, I think it's all monk specs, right? It's not just,
So right now it doesn't affect Brewmaster, because Brewmaster has a separate Spinning Crane Kick spell.
Gotcha.
It should, it should.
Gotcha. Well, that's, yeah. So so Spinning Crane Kick now uncapped. A bunch of people came into, particularly like the Mistweaver channels, thinking like we were now some AoE gods in Mythic Plus, which, and like Venthyr is now somewhat the most amazing thing ever, still with like this change, and we'll have unlimited Venthyr uptime.
Unlimited power.
With our legendary and our uncapped Spinning Crane Kick. I mean, like, I'll be completely honest with you, from like a Mistweaver perspective, this is, I mean, it's a DPS increase, right? No matter how you look at it. But I don't think it's a game-breaking one for us, at least, right? I think the bigger issue, like we sort of talked about briefly at the start, was like Windwalker. I would be, not that I'm scared to be a Windwalker, but like there's got to be some other changes to Windwalker here, because
Dance of Chi-Chi is going to die for this.
That's fair. Because you get a dance proc and unlimited or and uncapped Spinning Crane Kick on a massive like 10 with Bone Dust Brew active. Everyone at that point is Trill. Everyone at that point is just Trill by just hitting one button.
I mean, there's a guy in my guild that on his Windwalker alt in Mists did 100k on a single pull, like a single pack, just like just chain dance and GG procs with Bone Dust Brew up. They can already do some truly incredible things. And now if you take that you know, six target capped SCK, which, you know, he was at that six target cap on that one pull because there were six enemies in it, and then you just chain three pulls together and he gets that to happen with 18 mobs, just like casual 300k damage,
without trying, right?
So I mean, there's a little bit of luck in that, because he did get to just cast, you know, Spinning Crane Kick back to back to back to back with Dance of GG. So that's a little bit, there's an element of luck to getting that much damage out of it, but still, oh my god, it's going to be nuts.
I don't play Windwalker very regularly. I feel like I expect some changes to some of their buffs, procs, things like that, because there's no way this lives.
Dance of Chi-Chi is also something that people in the PvP community are not happy about, because the interaction with Dance of Chi-Chi and Bone Dust Brew and the other multipliers that they have, like the conduit that increases their damage from having all their SCF clones fixated on somebody and an SCF itself. You add all those together and you can just like Dance of Chi-Chi and like murder somebody.
I guess there'll be changes across the board here for this, or some other mitigating.
I think Dance of Chi-Chi is gonna die. I think Dance of Chi-Chi is gonna die. I think that's what they're gonna do. They're gonna just say, listen, he was too beautiful for this world.
And there hasn't, I mean, there hasn't been too many other changes. Even like, so just, I mean, that was the big one for Monk specifically, right? I think, so, but there hasn't been many changes across other classes yet, at least that were announced this week. So, I mean, I'm hoping we'll start to see some balancing in the next couple weeks on the PTR.
There's only one other spell that got its cap completely removed this week, and that's Glaive Tempest, which is in talent for Havoc Demon Hunter that I don't think anybody has ever picked. It's their artifact ability from Legion, and it was like weird and bad in Legion too. It like did okay numbers, but it was weird and bad in Legion too. It's still weird and bad, and maybe it does numbers again and people pick it because it does numbers, but I cannot remember a single time I've ever heard anybody say, man, I wish I could pick Glaive Tempest. It's a really cool ability.
That's so funny. Yeah. So, yeah. So, I mean, I guess, yeah. They also, I think, also removed... I'm reading the notes wrong. So that's sort of the, I guess, the two AoE cap updates this week. They also added some catch-up mechanics in Korthia, specifically around the Archivist Codex reputation, which I know you're excited about this one, Emelson. They basically added sort of some additional relic generation. So there was a tier 4 offering right now that's in the game that basically sort of you have a chance to like double up the reward you get in terms of relics. Whenever you get relics or reward from like world quests or killing a mob or something like that. So they've now increased that doubling. So the effect that it can double, which is I think good. And then they've also added more relic drop increasing items on tiers 3 and tiers 5. So when you get to tier 3, there's a new thing you can buy, which basically increases the chance you get, I think, more relics that way. All these, of course, are bind on account, so they will work with alts. So the idea is like they're just sort of increasing relic generation at more points in terms of as you sort of raise your reputation there. Which is like, I don't know what, I think it's funny that they're adding it now. Well, not funny that they're adding it now, but it's interesting that they add it now in sort of 9.15 in terms of like what, I'm wondering if Blizzard ever goes in and has an idea of what they want to grind to be. And then like, and it seems like they missed the mark, right?
They missed the mark on this one because nobody knows what the fuck to do. They have never made a more confusing or tedious grind than this. It's not like, so if you look at stuff like the grinds that were on Timeless Isle back in the day, stuff like the bloody coins, you didn't need to, for one thing, you didn't need to grind those. You know, you straight up, you just didn't have to do it. But then it's also like figuring out how to grind, how to do that grind because you want the thing at the end of it was part of like why you were doing it. As opposed to this, where like people are trying to do it for raid gear, basically. And it's just, I'm going to be honest, I have no idea how to optimize this. I did a little bit of looking at it. There was a bunch of old information floating around that's like I had been told was out of date. And I like asked some people and they're like, do this. And I was like, you know what? I didn't actually write that down, so I don't remember anymore. But it's just like, the Archivist rep grind, if it were for transmog and toys and mounts and whatever, I think it would be totally fine.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit overtuned in terms of like the amount of time it requires, but I think it would be pretty fine. But as part of a grind for raid gear, it's so opaque. There's nothing clear about it. It's just frustrating. And then on top of it, there's the random doubling chance of fragments. So like some days you get 3,000 fragments and some days you get 100.
Which is annoying. Yeah. And the weird thing too is like there are, it's like on rank 6, there are two items that let you increase the item level of like your, when you do go through upgrades of like the Korthia armament gear.
Right.
But they're both on rank 6. So like, and by the time you get to rank 6, in most cases, like, you're filling in gear on alts, I guess, but I don't think your alts actually get the achievement to do it. So your alts have to grind Korthia. So it's almost like they built the grind not for your main character, but for your alts to gear up. I don't know. It's just weird. The rep itself. I mean, like like I said at the start, the only reason I'm doing it is because it's part of a meta achievement and I want a mount, because I guess I'm now a mount getting collector.
The third hand mount or whatever.
Yeah. It's also the dark colored one, so it's like black with like red highlights. It looks really cool.
Okay.
I think it's the best looking one personally. But yeah, I mean, yeah, Korthia, like, yeah, and like the only, like, the way that I do Korthia is like, if I see a rare, I'll kill it. I don't look out for them, right? And then I just do the chests, like the chests and the rift every day.
Yeah.
There's like four chests, and that's sort of how I get my stuff.
But
I don't know. Korthia just, it's, they seem to want to keep recapturing Timeless Isle, but then put player power on it, which is like the only player power I remember on Timeless Isle was like,
was the coins.
Well, the coins, well, but then.
The quest for the cloak,
right? Yeah. Like the legendary cloak, you had to do stuff on the isle. But the coins themselves, I don't remember. I think part of the quest sent you there for like a couple things, but
right. But it wasn't like a long grind you had to do on the
isle. No. Because like the idea is you'd have your cloak before you did Garrosh, right? You had your cloak for Garrosh.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's actually such a good concept if you think about it. I'm sorry, we're going off on a tangent here, but the idea is that like you make a grind for power, particularly here, right? End when the normal player gets to the final boss of that tier, because like you'd want to use your super powerful item to kill the super powerful boss,
right.
And like in this case, right. It seemed like they're like missing that, where like
there's also the fact that you don't get a super powerful item for finishing this grind. Between 2 and 6 sockets, or 2 and 4 sockets, whatever it is, because you can't socket domination set gear.
That's fair point. But yeah, that's a good point. But it just seems like the grinds nowadays are just grinds for like grinding sake versus like, matching some level of like getting something and using it. So
the other thing that was on Timeless Isle that I recall, which I didn't rate at the time, so this is secondhand, was frogs for the coin.
Yeah.
But that was also something where you just like, it wasn't a daily grind or something. You just went there on an afternoon and killed frogs for an hour. And then you had all the coins that you could ever want, really.
Yes. Yeah.
I know about that actually more from people talking about going and grinding the frogs for coins to bonus roll transmog from Siege.
Oh yeah, because you could use the coins to buy the tokens. That's right. It was like the BFA style, like you buy 3 tokens at that point. Yeah. I remember those. But yeah, so it feels like they try and recreate Timeless Isle every expansion. Every expansion gets like further and further from what Timeless Isle actually was. So
you're like 90% right, but then like Mechagon exists, and the reason that Mechagon was closer is that Mechagon didn't have this like huge bit of player power attached to it and just had a bunch of stuff going on, whereas
that's true.
Korthia has rares, that's it.
Yeah, and like a faction you need to grind up. That is true, but I mean, I guess in 915 it'll get slightly easier. I don't know how much easier, but slightly easier.
I'm gonna say this is not enough to get me to go and actually get rank 6. Stopped doing the assaults. I am like a bajillion years off of getting the meta achievement. I did finish. I have the achievement for Torghast now for maxing out all the stuff there.
I don't know. Yeah, this was it. It was a couple weeks ago. It was like last week. So I did do that. That was the last time I did Torghast, was whenever that cap hit. That was the last week I did it. So,
which the final like capstone traits for that are actually like really powerful.
Yeah, they are. That's for sure. So Korthia easier soon. Well, faster, I guess. Maybe not easier, but faster. And then the other thing that they announced was they officially announced Mage Tower. Coming back with
Legion. We speculated about this last week. It's coming.
Yeah. So, and they've also sort of now said what the reward is. So basically I want to spend a little bit of time talking about this one too, but they're reopening all 7 of the scenarios, right? So there was 2 tank,
one tank,
2 healer, 4 DPS.
Okay. There's 2 healer only by virtue of the fact that Disc Priest got a different one.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So it's 1 tank, 1 healer.
5 and the Disc Priests are like mushrooms. You know, they're off on their own axis of existence.
Yeah, but the Disc Priest one, I guess they sort of said it here in the notes. The Disc Priest one was the same as like the BM Hunter, Windwalker Monk, Gestralock. Yeah. So the way that they're doing this is that if you if you basically defeat it, you get a chance at transmog. It seems like the transmog is not spec specific, but just class specific.
Right. So it's technically a recolor of the tier 20 gear.
Yeah. So technically you really only have to do this on each class once. Just pick the spec I think that works the best. There's also a achievement for doing all seven scenarios, completing all seven of them on different classes. So I'm excited about this.
They also announced one more thing before we talk about our impressions of this. It's going to be normalized player power. I don't know exactly what that means yet. But normalized player power, meaning some kind of eye level scaling, so that you can't just out gear it like you could at the end of Legion, which actually means that, like, depending on when you did it, it's going to be either easier because you did it at the beginning of Nighthold, or harder because you did it at the end of Legion than the last time you actually did these encounters.
Yeah. They are adding one other reward. There's a druid form reward if you do it on your druid. It's like a fell bear.
Yes.
Or bear thing. Actually, looks kind of cool.
Which I'm going to pull up. So first off, the monk transmog on stream.
Front and center.
This is the best color of this set. Actually, maybe the second best. There's the white color that's pretty good too. This one like really stands out. This is neat.
Yeah, the orange. Yeah, I actually really like it. I think I've said in the past, I'm not a huge fan of transmog, but this is kind of cool.
And then
you're trying to collect things.
You cannot get the old artifact weapon skins. Those do not unlock. They made an exception for the werebear form, which I agree with their reasoning for 100%, because it is such a unique thing. It's not like, okay, so for Brewmaster, for example, our weapon skin is just another like staff with a boondoggle on the end that has physics. There's 16 other ones that you can get from Legion. You may not get the exact one that you get, but you can get that form factor. You can get something that's very similar. You can get pretty close to it. There is nothing that's remotely close to the werebear form in the game. You either have it or you're you know, the bear with your ass in the air.
Right. I think the other thing too is that particularly as a guardian druid here, right? You don't see your transmog, right? So them getting like the tier 20 armor recolor for the majority of their time spent in a raid.
That also applies to like feral druid, right? But
yeah,
the feral druid form is just a shiny cat. Like it's still a cat. You can get other cats. The werebear is not just a bear.
That's true. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is a very different model. Yeah. Different animations, all that type of stuff. So, so they announced sort of Mage Tower coming back, announced the reward structure, what's coming. So the tuning wise, right? So sort of basically talking about normalized player power tuning, which I'll see. Like, I think the funny thing is, and I think people are going to get upset about this regardless of how they tune it, right? Whether it's going to be quote unquote too easy or too hard for the individual player, you'll make your own determination. It's not going to be like for anybody who did original Mage Tower, particularly original Mage Tower, I'll not say as it was intended, but like early on. So in like the Nighthold, basically right after it launched, it's going to be easier for you to do this. For the simple fact that you know what to expect, right? You might not remember specific timings back then, but you'll know, like I can tell you now from like a healer perspective, I know there are going to be certain waves in that phase one where I'm going to need to use paralysis on this one mob, make sure I have the AoE stun, I can't think of the name of it.
Leg sweep
up for like a certain pack, right? And I'll know that sort of timing. And I might not know it specifically, but I'll be able to like figure it out maybe wipe once or twice and be good, right? Yeah. So they'll like you'll know sort of how the encounter goes. And so it's I think in that regard it's definitely gonna be easier. But it just depends on how much easier, right? Like I'd like to spend maybe like an hour or two on it, right? Get through it, like learn it, have to relearn a little bit.
Yeah.
But
I think it's actually maybe going to be the weirdest for tanks, because a lot of tanks have completely different kits now than they did in Legion.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff like the only one that is maybe appropriate. So in these Mage Towers originally had like slightly different tuning for different specs, depending on, you know, the tanks I think had the most noticeable ones where bears, the puddle under the boss was huge because they had such big range that they couldn't just like attack him from outside the puddle and avoid the panic. Then for prop paladins, the boss had like double the health of any other tank, because in theory they did so much damage. In practice, their damage was a little bit not that high. But this expansion, it actually being double might be appropriate because they can drop ashen and throw hammers and like go nuts.
Oh yeah.
But for example, in Legion, when we were doing this, we had two legendaries that we no longer have. One of them healed you when you used Purifying Brew. We don't have that anymore. That was a form of sustain that we no longer have. We now have Celestial Brew, though. But Celestial Brew doesn't line up against, you know, rot damage very well. So it's like, well, is this going to be harder because we can't, you know, put on, what is it, Guyplins. We can't put on Guyplins and, like, heal for a quarter of everything we purify. Is it going to be easier because it's tuned differently and because Celestial Brew is, like, sleeper pretty good? We have Invoke Niazao now, like, baseline, and we don't have to spend a talent on it, you know?
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope people... I think the one thing that I just hope, at least in general, people just don't shit on it, right? I guess is the nice way of saying it, right?
I really want that to...
Just because I think no matter what, like, you're going to be... If you're going into sort of Mage Tower with the idea that this is going to be exactly like it was the first time, and, like, super difficult, very fun in terms of, like, working out solo what you need to do, like, I think you're going to be disappointed, but... If you treat it more of like, hey, we're about to revisit this old content and get some cool transmog out of it, right? And we'll mess around for a couple days in it. Like, hey, that's, I think, the way you should sort of view it. So,
yeah, I mean, I would be pretty happy if these were tuned pretty high. But also, like, I also want them. I want domination sets. I mean, domination sets shouldn't work because they don't work outside the mall, right? Part of Azeroth and stuff like that should be turned off. All that kind of thing. That's one thing. So if we can use our neck and Azerite traits, it's going to be completely trivial.
Yeah. Or, I mean, do you think they'll let us use our legendaries? What if you need your legendary to, like, complete it?
I doubt it.
But maybe not to use it, but at least to just have it. Yeah, I don't know. Because I guess some of those abilities are deactivated now, right? Like, they don't.
Most of them
are. The legendaries no longer. Yeah, so, it'll be interesting to see how they actually implement, like, the finer details, but I think this will be fun, considering, too, you'll have 2 weeks to do this at the start, right? Because the first Legion time walking after this patch is 2 weeks long.
Yeah.
So, that'll be fun to sort of head back in the Mage Tower. And, yeah, I mean, I think most people look at this and say Mage Tower, like, the same way you'll hear people talk about, like, Throne of Thunder and, Hellfire Citadel and... sort of that from like a rating perspective being just very good raids, like top tier, like rating content. I think Mage Tower is like the best solo content they've ever put in this game, hands down. Like, there's nothing, like, the only thing that comes close for me personally, and it wasn't really solo, was the class mount quests. So doing like the Warlock class mount in Classic was like a very cool experience in terms of like going through that sort of idea. I'm wondering if I like, so never had a priest or a hunter, right, to do like their like Anthenum and Benediction quests and what is the hunter weapon, like
Rock-Dalar.
Yeah, like never did those, but I'm wondering, like, it was a very similar feel of like having some like solo thing to do or like something that just you completed. Was cool. So yeah, Mage Tower was super fun to do at the time, so I just hope it continues. I hope people just enjoy it for what it is and don't like get really upset that like, oh, this, it only took me two pulls this time instead of like the hundreds I did before. This is way too easy. I was like, well, they didn't.
I hope it doesn't take people two pulls. I mean, there's like, okay.
Well, yeah,
the worm one is going to take people two pulls because the worm one is easy. Like,
that was
What's your ranking in terms of the difficulty of these? Which one's going to be hardest? Which one's going to be easy?
So I'll be completely honest with you. I don't think I've done all of them. The worm one is the one in the cave where you have to interrupt the worm, right? Or you die essentially. Yeah.
Yeah.
That one I did on my, it was a, one of the hunter specs has to do that one.
Beastmaster. Okay.
That was a joke. Yeah. That seemed very simple. The, honestly, to be fair, the healer one, at the time was probably the hardest. I think the healer one will be generally easier now because healers just have more damage.
I would disagree with that. I think the tank one was harder than the
So the Brewmaster tank one did take me longer to do than my healer one.
It took me longer to do than the healer one too. Like I did the Mistweaver one as well. I've done all of the challenges, and I did all of the, I have all of the artifact skins except for like Warlock and Mate. I think are the only two.
Gotcha.
So my personal ranking, I would say the tank one is going to be the hardest. The healer one is going to be right up there with it. It's going to be second hardest, maybe takes over hardest depending on tuning.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, there's going to be, depends on tuning. The imp one might be completely impossible because this is the one where I think they could most easily screw up the tuning. The imp one could be third. Or it could be the closing the eye one, which is the frost one. Frost DKs did that, Survival Hunter, Havoc Demon Hunter. So that one was probably like the third hardest one in Legion, in my opinion. So it's going to be one of those two, either the imp one or the frost one. And then it's going to be then there's like three fairly easy ones that could all end up like being easier or harder depending on tuning. There's the one, the twins, which is what Marksmanship Hunter balanced. That was theirs. That one took me like 10 pulls when I did it on my hunter with like crappy gear. And then there's the worm and the Valor Jar one. And the Valor Jar one was like a joke. So was the worm one. Those are both complete jokes. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I only really remember the worm one, and that was it. That was just sort of making sure you interrupt the one cast and did enough damage in between, so like you didn't wipe to like the adds that spawned.
And didn't stand on the rocks that fell from the ceiling.
Oh right. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. The tank one though, I remember positioning, particularly there was like, wasn't there an ability where it was like two orbs and there was a line between it and you had to dodge? Am I thinking of the right?
You're encounter? Close. So there's eyes that spawn. And they look at you, and if you don't look back at them, they knock you off.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And then Infernals that spawn, and the Infernals have a like line frontal that if you get hit by it, you get knocked off. It's gotcha. Actually such a funny encounter because it doesn't actually care how tanky you are almost at all. It's like 90% just not getting knocked off the platform.
Does the boss do a knockback too? I remember having to like get away from the boss at certain points.
No. So the phase one, the main boss has like a puddle under him that applies a stacking max health reduction.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And so you would go in, do damage to him, and then leave the puddle to let the stacks drop and get your health back.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then there was also like Velen, worst healer in
the World of Warcraft. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Would spawn healing orbs that also disoriented people, so you would use interrupt stuff.
Gotcha. Yeah, the tank one I remember just being insanely difficult, and like, well, maybe not insanely difficult, but like I remember hearing like the difficulty too would be wildly different depending on what tank you were.
Yeah,
because like if you had a higher DPS tank, you just shorten the encounter and a lot of stuff you wouldn't have to worry about.
Fewer infernals, fewer eyes. Yeah. The final phase would be easier because you could kill it faster.
Yeah. Yeah. Similarly, like that's the same thing like with Monk, like because our damage at the time was so low that like we would literally like if you were if like even Holy Pound at the time and like Restoration Druid for sure would like quickly clear everything because they had so much damage and like Monk was like literally killing a mob as the next wave was spawning.
Yeah.
At least in the first phase where it's just like super, super tight to do. So,
yeah. And all of those numbers are going to be different now. Like right now in Legion, Brewmaster was like pretty good damage, but probably not the highest damage at the time. But it was very durable. But the durability came from Stagger, which basically everything in the counter ignores. True. So that meant, but then they also like they tune the HP for the main bosses based on your expected damage, basically for your spec. So like it had more health for Guardian Druid and for Prop Paladin, and less health for Brewmaster and DK. But then it's also like, I mean, if you're going into this, the easiest way. So sorry, the easiest encounter is the Vengeance Demon Hunter one. If you go into the tank one and you're a Vengeance Demon Hunter, that is the easiest encounter out of all of them. if you're not Vengeance Demon Hunter, then it's the hardest one, in my opinion. Because so much of the fight is just not getting knocked off, and Demon Hunters can literally just glide. Just press spacebar. It basically doesn't have a cooldown.
That's true.
Way you can really die with that by getting knocked off is if you get knocked back, hit glide, and then you get knocked back again after you're already gliding. And then there's a chance that you can get knocked off before you can deactivate and reactivate glide.
That's true. Yeah, I guess that would be pretty easy for them. Yeah, so I mean, oh god, these encounters. It'll be fun to go back to this stuff.
I'm super looking forward to it. This is going to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, particularly, yeah, I'll probably try and do the ones I haven't done. Because like I said, I did all the monk ones, did all the hunter ones. There's probably still like a couple out there that I didn't do. And that, to be fair, like the only one I actually distinctly remember a lot is the healer one.
Yeah.
Because everything else I did the healer and the tank one pretty early. But like the Windwalker one and all the hunter ones I did very late. So like,
yeah,
like gear wise, I just outgeared it and it was almost trivial, right? I just did it to be fair to get the transmog. So
yeah, of course. The hunter one. I did the marksmanship hunter one first, because that was like my not my main at the time, but like my favorite character at the time and the one I cared the most about getting. And then I did Brewmaster one, or started it. I finished the Beast Mastery one before I finished the Brewmaster one, because the Beast Mastery one was again the worm and it took like 5 pulls.
Yeah.
I spent like 120 on the Brewmaster one or something.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there was definitely, I remember there was definitely a little bit of a competition in Discord at the time about like what week you would get it as like your monk, so your Mistweaver. So
yeah.
I remember those days were fun. But
yeah.
But yeah, that and like, oh my God. I just remember like Druids having Mass Root. So like Resto Druid, particularly on the mobs, it would fixate you, just had the easiest time because they could like root it, cyclone it, so much CC. And like Monk, I'd have to like leg sweep, run away, ring them. Then after ring was over, port back, but like still doing enough damage to the mobs you need to do damage to. And it was just like a mess. So
and then there's also stuff like day one of the Mage Tower. Bears could wear one of their legendaries with Boomkin Infinity and outrange the puddle. They reduce your max HP while still being able to hit the boss and push the boss without ever actually having to deal with that mechanic. So they could just sit there outside the range and just like spam and hit them.
That's so funny.
So there's stuff like that we won't have this time. So there's like people who got the bear one day one because they were able to just ignore the mechanics for the first half of the encounter.
Oh yeah. 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 So, but yeah, definitely won't see that again, hopefully, but maybe some other funky stuff will come in, but
there's no way to get 40 yard swipes again. So
that's true. That's fair. That's fair. But I think, yeah, like we talked about this last week, a little bit about like bringing content back. I think this is it's a cool way to do it. And like, to be fair, I think the reward structure is like, hey, if you want to do this, it's there. If you don't want to do it, it's not. But like, this is sort of one of those things where the community as a whole thought this was super cool. And if it's a part of Legion time walking, which will be sort of a consistent thing now, right? A part of the rotation, then you get to look forward to something. Like maybe you don't finish everything in the first 2 weeks, but you come back and like whenever it's back up and like 6-8 weeks later and like do like focus on one of the challenges, right? Like get your character ready. So this will be fun.
I'm really excited. I also, so one last thing before we move off of this topic, do you think they should turn off Covenant abilities?
I do, actually. I was thinking about that too. I do. I don't know if that reduces the power of a class too much or a spec too much, right? Like, I think you get there is like where sometimes your Covenant ability is sort of like you're expected to have it, or it's sort of baked into like what makes your class not maybe not good but play well. I think losing that, maybe you lose some of like the flavor of being of playing that character, playing that.
I'm just thinking like trying to do the tank challenge as a prop paladin. If you're Venthyr, you just drop Ashen and you hit Wings and Seraphim and you just go nuts. Like
yeah.
And then that's the damage gap between a Kyrian prop paladin and a Venthyr prop paladin is pretty high.
Yeah.
Like dropping a 4-minute cooldown on the boss is going to be so much better than pressing Divine Toll. Even though Divine Toll has a much lower cooldown, like you're probably pushing it before your second Divine Toll anyway. So
yeah. Well, yeah, that, and then like two, like even like Holy, I think Ashen is just probably an outlier because like I can see Holy Paladins too just deleting like waves of mobs off the start, right? And so like the opening sequence,
they just drop Ashen and it's just completely like Ashen
solos it. Yeah. Maybe stun the fixate mobs, they don't get one shot, but like at the end of the day, it's just like easy peasy. So
Whereas like in comparison, I think you could do the only Covenant that I think would really not do well for Brewmaster in the tank challenge is Venthyr.
Fair.
Like Night Fae has actually got a pretty nice niche in its consistent AoE because have multiple Infernals up and being able to also the Feyline Stomp has a long enough range to reach the boss from outside the puddle unless they change that. Like it has upsides. Yeah. Whereas, like, you know, Kyrian offers a cooldown, and then Necrolord offers a different kind of, like, consistent damage kind of cooldown thing. So I think there's, like, upsides to each of those three. So I think for most classes, it's probably going to be okay. But then there is stuff like Ashen that's just, like, complete outliers, and maybe it's correct for them to turn off Covenants.
Or I guess the other question, too, is, like, does it matter, right? Like, does it matter that they're active or not? Because, like, at the end of the day, there's no power associated here. There's really no...
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a level of, like, personal prestige, but there's not, like, hey, I completed all 7, and it was super, super difficult, and, like, I'm the first one in the world.
I think it really depends on what they want for this. If they want it to be super difficult, then I think they have to turn Covenants off, because it's going to feel bad to be like, yeah, I tried to do it as a Kyrian, and I just couldn't do it because it's just tuned for a Venthyr.
Yeah.
And I'm not a Venthyr, and that's bad. But then if they don't want it to be super hard, if they want it to be something where most people are, you know, they put their hour in and they are pretty likely to get it. 1 hour, maybe 2 hours, and they get it regardless of Covenant or whatever, then, you know, it's okay then for it to take 3 pulls on a Venthyr Paladin and 20 pulls on a Kyrian Paladin because of the differences in Covenants. Because they're still both going to get it within a couple hours.
Right, yeah. So we'll see what they think. I mean, I think I could go either way in terms of having them enabled or disabled. I think it just depends, right? So I think that's it. I know we're super late. I didn't actually do Lore Corner this week, and I to be fair,
we both had busy weekends. So we
are at brunch,
I think we're gonna wrap it up here, and that's going to be the show for today. So thank you all for listening. Hope you all enjoyed it. We will be back here, same time, same place. The podcast will be online on peakofserenity.com later today, YouTube shortly after. And actually, it might not be. It might be tomorrow this week. But it will be up sometime in the next couple of days. But if you enjoyed this and you want to support it and the other work that we do over on the Peak of Serenity, you can do that by going over to our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. And of course, if you don't want to or aren't able to contribute to the Patreon, please come join the Discord. Discord's a great place. We have a lot of great people there that are very, very active. I think all of the lounges are super active. All the questions channels are super active, and there's always questions coming in that you can learn from or help answer or anything like that. So, that's it. Have a good day, and we will see you next week.
Bye.